is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
3 minutes after 12 is the time, and a historic moment in the history of the Mystery Hour is upon us. More details to follow. Let us begin with the important business of reminding you what happens at this stage in the week. It is, of course, your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. A simple phone call is all that stands between you and enlightenment, illumination, satisfaction. And the number you need is, as ever, 0345 6060 973. The way it works is this. Someone rings in with a question, and then someone else rings in a little bit later with the answer to that question. In between those two events, someone might ring in with an answer to the question that's actually not correct. And it is upon that issue there that we have built something that I have been itching to tell you more about pretty much since the pandemic began. Because today is the day that you can bring Mystery Hour into your own homes, into your own lives, and into, well, not the car, probably, but anywhere else that you can play board games, you will now be able to play Mystery Hour. We've got the board game. It is up and running. I am so unspeakably proud of it. You'll be delighted to hear I didn't have an awful lot to do with the formulation of it. And Adrian, who you've heard me mention a few times on the programme, formerly of LBC Towers, has written the question card. So he's been here pretty much from the beginning of it. It's just lovely. It's a thing that I never thought I would see. An actual board game for sale with my ugly mug on the box. Mystery Hour, one of the most fun features on the radio the most fun feature on the radio that I've ever been involved with. And the thing that I probably get asked about most when I'm out and about going around my business is now officially a board game. And you can get hold of it from the website specially set up for the occasion, mysteryhour.co.uk. We spent ages coming up with that title. mysteryhour.co.uk. Or just head over to my Twitter account, at MrJamesOB, where you'll see various links. The way it works, it's lovely, this. It's like a cross between Call My Bluff and Would I Lie to You. So you get dealt cards at the beginning of the game, and the cards contain a question and two answers to that question, one of which is correct and one of which is incorrect. And then you get a little bit of time to shuffle your cards and think of another wrong answer. So this is the bit that I love. This is the sort of Call My Bluff bit of it. You can think up your own wrong answer to the question. And then you read out all three answers in the hope of persuading your fellow players to pick an answer that is incorrect. So they get the points if they pick the correct answer to the Mystery Hour question. You get the points if they pick the wrong answer. And you get double points if they pick the answer that you have made up that day. So, I mean, in terms of unfair home advantage, I suspect that the more you've listened to Mystery Hour, the more chance there is that you've actually heard the question happen on air and you might actually remember the answer. Although I have to warn you in advance, I have recognised some of the questions and I have still picked the wrong answer. But you will be familiar by now with the state of my short-term memory. So the more that you have played or the more you have listened, then possibly the more chance you've got of beating everybody into oblivion come Christmas. And of course, the real beauty of it is you have absolutely no requirement whatsoever to have ever heard of me or Mystery Hour or LBC to enjoy this game. So if you want to put it out on Christmas, maybe push Trivial Pursuit back into the cupboard and get the old Mystery Hour board game out, then I promise you that everyone from Auntie Doris to Uncle Keith to Cousin Jemima and even little Nigel will enjoy this game in ways that I could almost guarantee. It is lovely. So do find out more. mysteryhour.co.uk if you want to find out more, or head over to my Twitter account. And I'll tell you now, and I'll tell you for nothing, if you think I plugged my books mercilessly, you ain't seen nothing yet. Oh no, 8 minutes after 12 is the time. And Chris is in Waltham Forest with the first question of the week. Chris, well, I say that, of course. Question or answer, Chris?
Hello, James. Yes, it is a question. A question. Right, it's about musical theory.
Yeah.
And something that's always vexed me. And it's about when a song or a composition is described as being in a certain key, what does it mean? What does it really mean? What if a song is in G, or what's G about it? Or it's in F? Why is it in F? It's I've never really come across a satisfactory explanation.
How hard have you looked?
Well, I've got. I mean, it was explained. Well, I think they tried to explain it once on a program on the telly. Who's the other guy who did the Blackadder?
Rowan Atkinson. Oh, Howard Goodall. No. We love Howard Goodall.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, and he explained it once with the aid of a.
Is he in the Keith, is he in the building today? Do we know? Is Howard in the building? No, seriously, he works for Classic FM. He could be around the corner.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe I've just got a mental block on it, but I can't quite get
Is it? The note from which the octave begins. So if you normally start on. I'm making this up. I don't even know why I'm saying this out loud. But the key is the note that the octave begins on.
I don't know. I mean, a song could have lots of notes in it.
Yeah, but there's only eight in an octave, isn't there? Plus the. No, yeah, I should probably have kept that.
It could go beyond one octave, couldn't it? I mean, the song.
I should have kept that to myself. No double points for me on this one, Chris, for that absolutely rubbish made-up answer.
I was prompted to think about this again because a couple of days ago, Paul McCartney's been reminiscing on Radio 4 about his songwriting, and he was talking about. Yesterday, 2 days ago, and he was saying that, you know...
The
band suggested it should be in F, and he'd written it in G, and he had to sort of rewrite it. And what was going on there?
I love that. That's a really nice question. You know? I like that a lot. So, and of course, now you know, Chris, one of the added bonuses of asking a question on Mystery Hour is that you could end up having your question in the supplementary pack for the Mystery Hour board game at some point in the not-too-distant future, when the epic popularity that it is guaranteed to achieve prompts the manufacturers and the retailers to demand that we give sort of refresher packs of new extra questions. This could be on there.
A momentous day.
Wouldn't it be? Frabjous. Yeah. Frabjous, Chris.
To
Frabjous Day. Look after yourself. I love that question. What does it mean? What a key, a musical key. Make it simple for the likes of Chris and me to understand. 11 minutes after 12 is the time. You are listening to Mystery Hour, James O'Brien on LBC. Tamar is in Manchester. Tamar, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
No.
No, I didn't think I had. Is it Tamar? Tamar.
Tamar.
Sorry, I don't know why. Tamar sounds like a river. Tamar. There we go. Tamar.
There is Tamar Braxton, so right.
That's true.
If you can be allergic to anything, can you have an allergy to water?
Oh, I met a lad at the Mirror Pride of Britain Awards a few years ago who was effectively allergic to air. Absolutely heartbreaking experience. So I imagine you can, but I can't prove it. As it were. So I will put the question on the board. Allergic to water. Does rabies make you allergic to water? Hydrophobia?
You're asking the wrong person.
So are you.
I'm asking you.
We'll find out. I think it's probably a yes, but I can't prove it. Someone will be able to provide us with the evidence that we need. Can you be allergic to water? And what is a musical key? What exactly is a musical key? Dan's in Hadley in Essex. Dan, question or answer?
To the question.
Carry on.
So if the human race was to, let's say, become extinct tomorrow, what would be the last surviving piece of evidence that we ever existed? So like future species in 50 or 100 million years' time.
Yeah.
What would be the last thing to survive that could indicate that we existed?
Well, be fossils of us, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking it could be, for instance, like, diamonds, like engagement rings, where you could say, oh, look, an intelligent life form has mechanically cut this diamond.
Oh, so you mean apart from bits of us surviving in fossilised form, you mean something we've created?
Yeah, like evidence that we...
So we find an implement and it shows that early man... Well, it doesn't prove he exists. Oh, so you're going for complete extinction. So early man used tools and they find a tool. What would be the thing that would survive for the longest after us that we made?
Evidence that was ever there. I mean, because a few summers ago there was a drought, and they found sort of imprints of the foundations of Roman settlements and things like that, where the fields receded.
No, I remember. Like, it's magical.
How long ago would you know? What?
That's only a couple of thousand years.
Chernobyl.
So you've got piles of mussel shells at the beach, which show Chernobyl. What do you mean Chernobyl?
Well, that would that be the last thing, you know, with the radiation that's in the...
Mate, you're making it a little bit more complicated now. We started it off thinking it was fossils, then we moved on to things that we've made, and now we're looking at afterlife of radioactive material. So we're going to have to go with something. We're going to have to focus in on the question a little bit. Otherwise, you'll never get into the board game, you see, with a question like this. So what would be what man-made item will survive the longest? That's the question that you want. It's not, is it? No, it's not. You see, now you're an unsatisfied customer, and I feel bad. If the possible answer is radioactive material, then I think all bets are off, aren't they?
I don't know. It's just a suggestion.
But it's not man-made in a sense, is it? Radioactive material.
Well, the accident was a man-made occurrence.
Yeah, but the accident happened. That's not going to survive. The consequences of the... I'm going to go for a man-made item, something we can hold in our hand, that human beings made, that will survive...
No?
Okay, I'm not then.
Say, for instance, like a spaceship came along in 100 million years' time and the Earth is just a forest.
Yeah.
And they go, hang on a minute, this proves that something created this hundreds of millions of years ago.
Yeah.
So, well, it could be, you know, like I say, the foundations of a tunnel. It could be...
Yeah.
Fossils, it could be anything.
All right, well, it'll be fossils then.
What would be the last evidence?
It'll be fossils then, won't it?
Don't know.
Well, all right. I mean, this might be the best question that's ever been asked, or it might just be far too huge to even begin to answer. There's only one way to find out.
Well, it could be... No, it's a tiny thing. What is the last thing that could be...
No, the question is huge, not the answer. The question is too huge.
Well, every question could be huge, depending on how you look at it.
I know. That's the beauty of mystery hour. What about the wheel? Could it be the wheel?
Well, they'd have to find a wheel, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, they probably would. There's a lot of them about.
They go rusty, don't they? That won't last long.
Not the rubber ones. A wooden wheel? A wagon wheel? Concrete, mate. Concrete keeps growing.
Concrete keeps growing.
No, sorry, wrong show. Dan, I'll get you an answer to that question if it kills me. What would be, millions and millions of years from now, the longest surviving evidence of human existence? I think I may have overthought that question. Dan had it nailed down pretty much from the start. I love that. Allergy, can you be allergic to water? And what is a musical key exactly? 16 minutes after 12 is the time. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need to join in. 90 minutes after 12 is the time, and no, your eyes do not deceive you. Mystery Hour is now available as a board game directly from mysteryhour.co.uk. In fact, I've been telling much it costs, shall I? Like a proper sort of grown-up person. It costs £19.95, including delivery, and you can get yours free UK shipping, there you go, from mysteryhour.co.uk, and it is absolutely brill, as the kids used to say. Thomas is in Edinburgh. Thomas, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
To the music key question.
Yes.
So the easiest way to explain it to somebody that hasn't got any idea about playing an instrument. So if you imagine what a piano looks like, you've got the white notes and the black notes.
Yeah.
And within that, you've got scales. So you've got combinations of white notes and black notes in an order creates a scale. And in between each white note and each black note, there's a space, and that's either a tone or a semitone.
Which you can't hear. You can't play tones or semitones on a piano.
Well, you can play... So the tone or the semitone is the gap in between each note as you hear it. And the key in which something is played, the easiest way to explain a key is the scale, the notes in the scale... determine which key it's in. So, for instance, if something is in the key of F, it goes F, G, A, B flat, which would be one of the black notes, because the gap between the notes needs to be closer together. Each scale has its own corresponding
I feel you're close, but you underestimate the ignorance of people who have no knowledge of playing musical instruments. which is an occupational hazard of clearly being a musician. What do you play?
I play a trumpet.
Oh, do you?
Yes. Yeah. I suppose to better.
No, you've explained it in a way that all musicians will understand and nod along with, but the rest of us are still completely in the dark.
I will make it even simpler. The key of something is just the scale in which it's played. So it's just a combination of notes. So the key of something tells you which notes you can play and which notes you can't play. And if you do play the notes that you can't, it'll sound awful.
So they're naturally occurring then, keys, if you like. You could work out the keys, even if you'd never had a music lesson in your life. You wouldn't know to call them keys.
No, I wouldn't say that if you had no idea about keys, you'd be able to work out which
But just
key
from
it
listening, because it would sound, tonally, it would sound wrong if you pressed the wrong button.
If you knew which button was which note and you pushed that button, it didn't sound right.
I'm going to give you half a round of applause, but before that, I need to ask you a question. Can I ask you, as a trumpeter, what key is this in?
Oh, I have no idea.
Half a round of applause. And you may well be right, but using myself as the poster boy for ignorance, I still can't quite get it. Maybe we won't get any closer. Who knows? Thank you, Thomas. Roger's in Darlington. Roger, question or answer?
Good afternoon. It's a question, please, James.
Carry on.
I run a bar in an Indian restaurant, and every time we add Coke to a fizzy cola drink, goes flat within minutes.
Coke. You can't add Coke. You can add Coke to a fizzy cola drink, but that is unlikely to be the basis of your question.
Sorry.
It's all right. Don't worry, of course. And it goes flat. Why does the ice make it go flatter quicker?
I've Googled it. I've tried rinsing the ice in water, as somebody suggested, and it doesn't seem to help a great deal.
It's a major problem, is it?
It is in our restaurant.
Well, people complain.
Some of them do, some of them don't.
Or it just really gets your goat. It's you that's got a problem with this.
No, because I can open a fresh bottle of cola.
Yeah.
I want to mention the brand name.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry about that. That's fine.
You can literally visibly see it going flat. And it'd be nice to serve a drink to a customer and not worry about them coming back saying, I'm sorry, but this is flat.
On a professional level, before we get into the mystery hour element of the conversation, you've made a decision to serve it out of 2-litre bottles, have you?
Yes, we have. Well, because we're limited to space and everything else.
Yeah, but, you see, there is... God, I can't believe this is another area where I'm going to try and pass myself off as an expert. So there's your problem, really, is however tightly you put the lid back on, that is going to be less fizzy than if you served little bottles or tins, or if you had a pump, if you had it on draft. So that's your first problem right there.
I agree, but I can open, a fresh bottle, pour out a pint of cola, add the ice, and by the time I took it to the table, you can see the bubbles.
I may have misunderstood the question, but that's because it started melting. So you're really asking, why does water make my Coke go flat?
But I can just add 2 or 3 cubes of
ice. But it still starts melting. You can add 3 or 4 drops of water and it's going to be less fizzy, isn't it?
But to a degree where it's so noticeable?
Yes. Do you keep the bottles in a fridge?
No, we don't, because we're limited to space.
Ah, well, I feel like Columbo. So not only are you pouring it out of 2-litre bottles, which are going to start losing gas the minute you open them, even if you've only poured one small glass out, you're not refrigerating the big bottles either, and you're adding frozen water to them, which starts melting immediately, and it starts melting quicker, Roger, because the Coke's not chilled.
You know, I wish I'd rang up about Brexit an hour before.
So I'm pretty sure that the answer to your question is that your Coke is already warmer than it needs to be, and less fizzy than it could be, and you then add ice to it, which melts more quickly than it would in a chilled Coke, and melts more quickly than it would in a more fizzy Coke, because you've got less fizzy Coke in your glass already. So the
why isn't it the same in lemonade then?
So, are you serious?
Well, it seems to last longer in the lemonade. Is it something to do with the colour, perhaps? I don't know. I thought I'd ask the expert.
I think that warm a brown drink will absorb heat more than a white drink. Than a clear. All right, I've gone off a bit. I've got out of my comfort zone now. I'm moving into. But I mean, the bottom line is that if you're not chilling your Coke, and you're serving it out of big multi-litre bottles, you're on a hiding to nothing, mate. The ice is the least of your problems. But I shall put the question on the board. How little space have you got behind this bar? Are you sure it's a bar? Sounds like a cubicle.
Come and visit us one day and I'll show you.
I'd love to. What's the name of the restaurant?
It's the Draper Spice in Thirsk.
The Draper
and award-winning chef.
Thirsk in Yorkshire. Thirsk.
Yes.
Oh, blimey! Yeah. You know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that I've actually already been in there. At some point, I went to school not a million miles away, and if we we usually stopped at the Chippy in Thirsk on the way home, but we may well have. It's not anyway, you're on the Draper Spice. Next time I'm up there, I'll come in. Should I bring my own ice cubes? Have you thought about the ice cubes that are reusable, the ones that you freeze? You haven't got the space, have you?
Yeah, we used to have our own ice machine.
Right.
And that was worse.
Yeah.
So we started buying ice, obviously keep it in a freezer.
Yeah.
And I take out a minimum amount each time.
And it's just by so the time it gets to the table. Yeah. You can get ice cubes that are like plastic.
Right.
And there might be a choking problem. I'm just adding to your worry. Mate, leave it with me. Why does Roger's coat go flat when he puts the ice in it? 0345 606 0973 is the number you need. It's 28 minutes after 12. Ed's in Watford. Ed, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Ed.
We're very excited. It's been a slow day here in Watford. We got an answer to the water allergy question.
Oh, yes.
It's called aquagenic pruritus.
Oof.
And I've actually got a mild form of it, but some people do suffer really badly from it. They, if they sweat or if they cry, they come out in... Their skin feels like it's on fire and they're sort of...
Oh, Lord.
So some people really, really suffer from it. Mine's a very mild version, but...
But it's a
thing. We're very excited to...
You couldn't be more qualified.
Question, yeah.
How commonplace is it, do you think?
I think it's very rare. I mean, I haven't seen the figures, but when I was diagnosed about 15 years ago, the internet didn't exist, so no one really knew what it was. But
and did it occur late in life, or had you all, I mean, it developed later in life, did it?
I just had it when I was, I think, 17. I just realised that after showering, bathing, or changes in humidity, temperature.
Well, I never.
I was just getting this crawling, itching sensation and sort of a bit of a mild sort of anxiety attack, and then about 40 minutes later, it would go, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And they finally diagnosed it. But then I've seen, in recent years, there's been a few people on telly,
talking
and a couple of documentaries and things.
Oh, they can't get a better qualification than that. I'm sorry that you're so well qualified to answer this question.
I'm actually, compared to these other people, I mean, they really suffer badly
from it.
Must
be hugely debilitating and restricting.
For those people, it's
nightmare.
Pretty terrible,
What's it called again, just for my memory banks?
Aquagenic pruritus.
Aquagenic pruritus. And it gets you one of these, Ed.
Thank you very much.
There you go. Things have perked up in Watford haven't they?
It's brightened up a slow day in campervan sales, I can tell you that.
Thank you very much indeed, Ed. That's a time to buy a campervan. It'll be the only holiday we can have soon if they carry on in this direction. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:34 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the mystery hour continues. Questions in need of answers. Some people suggesting we should have given Roger a round of applause. A Ray Liotta for that. You may be right. It's too late now. My apologies, Roger. Maybe next time. But that's why I needed to know how many people suffer from the condition in order to be clear on how remarkable, for want of a better word, it was that someone who does rang in. What is a musical key? Thomas had a fair old crack at describing that, but only because I was too stupid to understand. We haven't gone definitive. It remains on the board. Why does ice make your coat go flat? 0345 60 60 973. And what will be the longest surviving evidence that humans existed? So millions of years hence, what will be the longest surviving evidence that humans existed? That is a brilliant question, and its brilliance will not necessarily be affected by the unlikelihood of there ever being any answer to it. 12:35 is the time. James is in Leamington. James, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
So the Coke going flat when you put the ice into it. So, when you put the ice into the glass, you're increasing like the surface area of the glass. So I don't know if anyone's ever noticed, but like when you look at like a fizzy drink in a cup, the bubbles like appear on the surface rather than just in the fluid itself, and they kind of grow and then they float off. So if you're increasing the amount of surface inside of the cup, you've got more surface for the bubbles to grow on and then go to the surface.
Can you do it again, but a bit thicker?
So, like, just have a glass with some Coke in it that's not got any ice in it, right? Yeah. And the bubbles only ever appear on the inside of the surface of the glass.
Yeah.
And then they grow, and then they float to the top of the surface, and that's how it goes flat.
Yeah.
If you then put something inside the liquid, whether it be ice or like a straw or something,
right?
You're giving it like more surface for the area to grow on.
So even the melting is not the major issue here. It's the surface area that's the major. So even if that suggestion of those little, we used to have some little plastic elephants that you kept in the freezer and then you dropped them in your drink, it meant it didn't dilute, but in terms of fizzability, the decrease would be comparable, would be similar.
Yeah.
That was more for a gin and tonic or something like that, so that it didn't get weaker, it didn't get lose its flavour,
but it would have lost its fizz.
Yeah, well, that's a great answer. I like it a lot. It was Roger that had the problem with the ice. I got that mixed up, and it was Ed that answered the question about the allergy to water, so I'm happy to clear that up. What are your qualifications, James?
I'm a fluid dynamics engineer.
So this is literally your bread and butter. Well, not literally.
Well, not quite. Not Coke with ice in it and bubbles, but...
Yeah, you do. Look, so go on then. What highfalutin, fancy pants fluid engineering do you do? Fluid dynamics engineering do you do?
Like simulation, computational stuff. So, on vehicles, mostly.
Oh, I see. Gosh. So this is, I mean, it is through your studies, though, that you know the answer to this question.
Yeah. Right, so where the bubbles, produce and grow, it's called a nucleation point.
This is a brilliant answer. But all of the Colombo inquiries that I undertook were relevant to the problem of his coat going flat so quickly, but all I was establishing was that he was beginning from quite a flatter than a suboptimal starting point.
yeah.
With the 2 litre bottles unrefrigerated. Can you believe that, James? An unrefrigerated.
Shocking.
I know,
absolutely.
An unrefrigerated 2 litre bottle of Coke is the worst possible starting point, after which, what was it, the nucleation?
The nucleation point is where the bubble starts.
After which the introduction of extra nucleation points makes an already bad situation worse.
Yeah, smashed it.
Beautifully done. Round of applause for James. Roger, it's all about the nucleation points, Rog. Seriously, sort the nucleation points out and the rest will follow. Also, buy a fridge. 12:38 is the time. Will is in Worthing. Will, question or answer?
It's an answer.
Carry on.
So it's an answer to the what is a key in music.
Oh, yes.
Now, the previous caller was almost right, and where it went wrong was your understanding of the semitone and the tone.
Okay.
So you said it was something that's something you can't play.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's so, say if you're looking at a piano and you've got two white keys next to each other, and there isn't a black key in between them, going from that one key to the other key, or one note to the other note, that is a semitone, and a key is a series of those semitones or tones put together. And when you then move, let's say you've got a different, when you move to a different key, like say C or F, it is that starting note, but that series of jumps has to be the same.
Okay, that was the only bit that was missing, was that the series of jumps has to be the same.
Has to be the same for that key or that.
So I was quite close. I just used the word octave inappropriately.
Yeah, because if you went from F to F, but all the jumps were different, it wouldn't sound like the right key. It has to be, those jumps have to be the same each time. That'll give you a scale.
And is that,
when you stack them on notes, the notes top each other, you'll get chords, and then that's part of it as well.
Yeah, I think I'm
there. So he was almost right.
So the key is determined by the note that begins it, and it's defined by the size of the gap between each note in the key.
Yeah, so with a major scale, which forms a formation of a key, if you jump by a tone, then a tone, then a semitone, then three more tones after that, you will get a major scale. And then from that, you get your chords within that, which then forms the key.
I'm giving you the round of applause, but if someone... Well, I mean, Chris has texted in. I don't normally read texts out, but this is quite a good one. He's going to try and do it with his guitar. So, you know, I might add to that, but you're going to get, well, first of all, what are your qualifications?
I'm a guitar teacher.
Yeah, I thought so. So, but you haven't got your guitar to hand.
Yeah.
Well, go on then, show us with the guitar. Do you know what I'm doing here, Will? I'll just while you get ready, I'll just explain to the listeners what's going on here. I'm just highlighting that even though there is now a Mystery Hour board game, which is available at mysteryhour.co.uk, it will never replace the magic of the live radio version. I don't want a board game my way out of a radio show. So you will never, when you're playing at home, for example, well, you might be able to, but you might not have any guitar players in the room, whereas we've got Will. Go on, Will.
Okay, so I'm playing electric guitar, so you might not hear very well.
That's
if you
right.
take the C major scale,
yeah,
there's very stiff jumps there.
Yes.
If I move it up to start on a D,
that'll
be the scale. We'll take the C one again, and then play the chords within that scale.
Yeah, I got it. I've got
that
it.
In total will give you the key. So within that key, those are the chords you could use.
And the chords are the notes within the key being played in conjunction with each other.
Yeah, you play three notes stacked to each other, that'll give you a chord.
Got
in
it.
Essence.
That's just good. You've done it, mate. Do you want to give us a little bit of a bit of a riff just to sign off? You don't have to.
I'll make something up.
Yeah.
Happy?
That's absolutely brilliant. Have a round of applause. That's in B flat, that round of applause. It's 12:42 as it's time. Lovely stuff. Jessica's in Leeds. Jessica, question or answer?
Question.
Go on then.
So you know how you've got pants? You've got a pair of pants when they're only one item of clothing. Why is it a pair?
Well, there's two legs.
Yeah, but that it's still one object.
Yeah, but it didn't used to be.
But it is now, so why didn't they change the word?
Oh, there are lots of reasons I didn't. I mean, are you familiar, Jessica, with the concept of a codpiece?
No.
Oh, this is awkward. A codpiece in medieval times was... Do you know what a cricket box is?
No, I'm only 11. I don't know much.
Okay. This is going to be quite tricky to explain in that case. I should have checked your age before I started. So in the olden days, imagine a pair of tights, yeah?
Yeah.
Cut it in half.
Okay.
So that would have been what it was like in medieval days. And then women wouldn't need this because they'd be wearing skirts and dresses, but men would have a special thing to cover them up with the middle bit wasn't sewn into the tights, so you would have a pair of pants, if you see what I mean, and that is why they are still called a pair of pants.
Okay, I think you deserve a round of applause for
that. That's very kind of you. Someone else might ring in and disagree, but I shall take it in the meantime. Thank you, Jessica. 12:44 is the time. I think I got that right, didn't I? Or did I? And that is, of course, the beauty of the Mystery Hour board game. You could have made up your own answer to that question and got double points. Jack's in Washington, D.C. Jack, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James. Or I'd say, sorry, good afternoon. It's very early over here.
Question or answer?
This is an answer to the piece about the last surviving note on society that someone might find in the future.
Yes.
So I study nuclear weapons and nuclear fuel. And there's been a long debate over how we're going to dispose of high concentrations of long half-life, very toxic nuclear material. You know, there have been proposed facilities at Yucca Mountain in the United States, another one, you know, very far north with a lot of scary-looking concrete spikes around it so that no one ever touches it. But scientists speculate that this will be the last remaining piece of evidence that our society ever existed.
How will we know that it was man-made and not naturally occurring?
So there are elements like uranium-235, which are used to make nuclear bombs, for instance, that are impossible to find in high concentrations, like you see in a nuclear bomb, like 80%, because they're artificially enriched. So if you find those in high concentration, it's impossible to find in nature. That is a telltale sign that intelligent society existed at some point.
Okay, cool. And that will exist after even sort of fossils have...
So these materials...
Blown up or dissolved.
Fossils can degrade. These materials, uranium 235 might not have the longest half-life of the bunch, but there are materials with half-lives of tens of thousands of years and hundreds of thousands of years that will last, you know, for a long time. And especially if they're found in one location in a very high concentration, that is going to be a sign that someone was using that material.
That's pretty good. I mean, in a way, he answered his own question, didn't he? When I was busy teasing him, he talked about Chernobyl, I mean, which introduced the concept of half-lives and radioactive material. But that would be the... That would be the thing. That would be the... what about stuff on the moon? Well, you know, where there's no atmosphere, so to speak. So theoretically, it could stay in place forever.
Well, I'm going a little outside of my qualification zone here, but I believe...
You and me both, Jack. You and me both.
But I believe the footprints from where Neil Armstrong first stepped on the moon are still there.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing really to disturb it.
Exactly.
In terms of degradation.
Yeah, so that could be, but it's, I mean,
that's
you're talking.
One.
Yeah, but that we
I
got.
Hope you haven't just stolen my round of applause.
No, you're getting a round of applause because you're dealing in the millions. I'm dealing in the decades, albeit that it was an interesting addition. And again, for the Mystery Hour board game, you could have gone for that. You could have gone for Neil Armstrong's footprints on the moon, and it would have been a feasible answer, but probably not the correct one. Anyway, what qualifications again?
So I study international affairs and security policy, which in part concentrates on nuclear fuel and nuclear fuel disposal.
There we go. One of these, please. All the way to Washington, D.C. Thank you, Jack. Great work.
Thank you, James.
No, man. Take care. 12:47 is the time.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:51 is the time. Next week, I was going to do it this week, but I can't launch it now. It wouldn't be fair. Next week, there'll be a free copy of the Mystery Hour board game for the best contribution to Mystery Hour, not including Keith. No, mate, you can't. That doesn't count as a contribution, does it? Also, you get paid. So next week, the best question or answer, and it will be entirely in Keith will be judging, entirely in Keith's gift. Not really. I'll just pretend that it is to, you know, introduce a bit of variety and jeopardy to the programme. It'll be entirely up to me. But we'll pretend, I mean, it will be Keith's decision, and Keith's decision will be final. But the best contribution to next week's Mystery Hour, and probably every Mystery Hour between now and Christmas, will win a brand spanking new Mystery Hour board game, which you can find out more about on my Twitter account, at Mr. James O'B, or indeed at mysteryhour.co.uk. 12:51 is the time. Back to Mystery Hour, the live, studio-based radio version. Marty's in Belfast. Marty, question or answer?
James, my friend, what about you? I have a question.
Carry on.
And it's to do with large, like wetland birds.
Oh, yeah.
When humans walk, the bottom part of our legs, from the knee down to our feet, bend backwards. But when you see these wetland birds walking about, the bottom bit of their leg bends forwards.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know why.
Well, I think you've already answered your question.
No? Okay.
Or have you?
Why?
Well, because we generally have not evolved to walk on very soggy ground. We walk on dry land, so the way that we've evolved to walk will be dry land friendly, and species that have evolved to walk chiefly on wetland are wetland friendly. So the hydraulics, for want perhaps of a better word, of walking change according to the sogginess of the land that you're walking on, I bet. No?
What about ostriches and emus? They're land birds, but they do the same thing.
They're probably evolutionary, and they probably evolved from wetland birds, and they just haven't evolved the next bit yet.
You're not convinced.
What are you talking about? I think you'll find that the words, they just haven't evolved the next bit yet, were written by Charles Darwin himself. They haven't evolved the next bit yet. All right.
Seriously?
No, not seriously. So when humans walk, our legs bend backwards. But when wetlands birds walk, their knees bend forwards. But pelicans and ostriches walk like humans rather than like geese.
No, ostriches walk.
Oh, but they're not on land. Oh, okay. So why would an ostrich walk more like a wetland? I think I've nailed this, actually. But I mean, I'm not going to give myself a round of applause. And I'm just glancing at the clock. We're going to have to hurry things. But we'll find out, yeah? I'll try.
Okay. Perfect.
Let's go. Thank you, Marty. So why do... I mean, ostriches are the anomaly here. Otherwise, my theory stands. But is my theory correct? And if so, why not ostriches? Byron's in Fareham in Hampshire. Byron, what would you like to say?
Hello, James. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Welcome aboard.
Love your show. Love your show. Brilliant.
Thank you, man.
Got a question for you.
Yes.
Okay, so if the cat sat on the window looking out the garden and it sees a bird on the fence...
Yeah.
What makes them chatter? It's like they can't get to the bird.
Yeah.
Who are they talking to? I mean, what makes them...
They're not... Yeah, I know. Do you know, we've got a kitten at home and I've had cats all my life. And this is the first time I've ever noticed it.
Ha! Yeah.
We've talked about it quite recently. It's the very first time that we've ever noticed it.
Yeah, it's just... it's not like it could be on their own on the windowsill, not in company of another cat or... I mean, what makes them do that? Is it instinctual, or I've always had cats, and I've never.
So it's like a kind of it's almost like a shudder, isn't it? A kind of the jaw. It's like
reaction. Yeah.
Are they not just warming up, getting ready to go and catch it? They're doing stretches. It might it could be.
It does.
I'll find out. What's the cat doing when it does that sort of shuddery, chattery thing? When it sees potential prey. We notice it with the kitten, particularly with moths knocking around the place. So I don't know. That's a great question. But I bet it's got something to do with stretching, like Andrew Castle does before he knocks up, knocking up. It's the cat equivalent of knocking up he's doing it now, actually, and he's on the radio. He's not even playing tennis today. 12:15, enough of the sound effects. Andrew, please. David is in Falkirk. David, question or answer?
It's an answer and a steward's inquiry to the longest item ever that will be ever... existing for humankind.
Go on then.
So your answer about Neil Armstrong's footprints was in the thousands of years. Jack's answer was in the millions. But the actual answer was in the billions of years.
Oh.
So when the sun expands to consume the rest of its fuel, it's going to become a red giant. That's going to consume the Earth. So all of Jack's nuclear radioactive waste is going to go. So is the moon. But the only thing that's going to be left of humankind at that point is going to be the Voyager space probe.
I guess, pedantically, the original question, it was Ed, I think, who asked it, did say what will be left on Earth.
He said, what was the last trace of human...
I'm not going to rule you out of that, because he did say if aliens come to Earth from space in millions and millions of years, but that doesn't matter. I think you're correct. What are your qualifications?
So Brian Cox talked about it on Stargazing Live a number of years ago. He had to describe.
But it's not guaranteed. Could it not bump into something?
It could, but space is a really, really, really big place.
Yeah, round of applause for that. You know, that's a very good point. Well said, David. Space is indeed it. That's how it got its name, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's why it's called space, because it's a really, really big place. But so you're going to get another round of applause, but I'm not taking away the Washington DC round of applause, because yours could be susceptible to intervention, could get burned up by another sun.
Yeah, it's feasible. It's conceivable.
So take your round of applause. All right, that's my advice.
I'll take it willingly. Yeah.
There we go. For David and Falkirk, we've got time for at least one more. Well, definitely. Is it Reynold in the Isle of Wight? Reynold, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on. You've only got about 30 seconds.
Okay, love your show.
Thank you.
The part of the knee, part of the bird's leg that bends outwards is actually their heel. They've got like an extended foot. Their knee is equivalent to the end of their drumstick, which is usually inside of their body. So that bending back bit is actually their heel.
And why does it, I mean, and that has just evolved way of walking for them.
Yes.
Right, qualifications?
Just read it in encyclopedias.
That'll do. Round of applause. I think that was probably half my round of applause, but nobody's greedy. And finally, Dean's in Greenwich. Dean, question or answer?
Answer.
Quickly.
Cats chattering. I was told by my vet that it's to do with them exercising their jaws, so when they do eventually catch the thing,
I knew it.
The bird.
That's literally what I said. That's what I said.
Well, you're right then. We're both right.
Yeah, well, high five and share the round of applause.
Thank you very much.
Boom. There we go. That's it for another day. You can get your own copy of the Mystery Hour Board Game at mysteryhour.co.uk. I know what I'm getting Andrew Carson
I've
for Christmas.
I've got a question. What are you going to get me?
A Mystery Hour Board Game. Keep up, will you?
How much do they normally cost? What am I getting? How much are you spending on me?
£19.95 at the mysteryhour.co.uk website, but to you, £30.
I've got a question. What's that?
That is my mug. People have commented on the size of it, Andrew. And also my mug.
I know. Oh, I think my ego will be the only thing remaining in billions of years. Take care, James. All the best.